Terry Wallace joining me for a McCafe coffee catch-up. Never miss a single goal with McDelivery. Welcome to your plough.
G'day, Dwayne. I hope Margaret sticks around and listens to footy golf later on, because she'll be quite happy with the way that the Blues are, what they got scored yesterday, but also how they've been going in general. I think they've had a reasonable year. I mean, if you take that one game against St Kilda out of the equation, and it was Thursday night football, and, you know, sort of big stage, as you sort of mentioned. But other than that game, they've been pretty good. I mean, you know, they're getting victories against Geelong at Geelong. Essendon, you know, now that form's been relatively frank. And to do what they did last night, you know, their form's pretty good.
Had a text here, Terry. Just before we leave Carlton, Teague's coaching and their style of play.
Yeah, it's been good. Look, they've been good. The thing that I noticed last night, now I did the game on radio, I know you did it for Fox. The thing that I noticed last night, I thought the Bulldogs, after three wins in a row, wanted to play neat, and I just thought the Blues wanted to play really combative football, and that was obvious right from the start. I heard one of your callers earlier on sort of saying about the tackle pressure inside forward 50, that was the thing that was creating the goals, and when you get your big blokes like Harry Mackay doing it, that really adds another layer. The other thing that I think has probably gone under the radar a little bit with Carlton is how settled they are down back. I mean, their two key tall defenders are doing a fantastic job for them. Liam Jones, obviously, is one of those who plays the deeper role. And Wiedering's had a magnificent year. So those two guys, as a combination of two key defenders, probably playing as well as nearly any of the key defenders in the competition. So they've done a pretty good job up until this stage, but clearly a lot of work still to go. But loving their work. And another thing, that brought in some blokes who can kick the footy and make good decisions. Now, McGovern's been up and down, we know that. He came in, you know, obviously 18 months ago, but he's a good user of the ball. When he's got the ball in his hands, he uses it well. And then obviously Jack Martin and Eddie Betts, well, that's just added a lot more class to the forward structure than what they've had in the past.
Okay, we're going to get to Richmond and Sydney shortly, Terry, but I haven't had a chance. Well, we had so many calls about everything outside of the Hawthorn performance and what Jordan Lewis had to say. I haven't had a chance to have a chat about it at length. So I've kind of held it off and waited for you. Your thoughts on Jordan Lewis's comments and the way Hawthorn's playing, and this idea of whether Hawthorn need to rebuild? It's not Clarkson's style to... He likes to be competitive every year. He doesn't like the idea of dropping out to 14th, I presume, and trying to rebuild for a couple of seasons.
Well, it's the way he came into the competition. So, obviously, his mindset has changed over a period of time, because I heard him about a week ago as well, where he said, we at Hawthorn don't go down, we don't go down the ladder, and we find another way to do it. Well, when he arrived, I mean, it was Hodge at pick one, Ruffy at pick two, Buddy at pick five, Jordan Lewis at pick seven, Grant Birchall at pick 14, Sue Rioli at pick 12, first round pick, Isaac Smith was pick 19, first round pick. So the basis of their success, so the Hawthorn success, it's not just all Clarko's success, was based on getting high-end, good young talent, and then once that good young talent was in, then it was surrounding it with senior players from other sides. It wasn't just getting senior players from other sides without the high-end young talent, and that's where they're at the moment. They keep continuing to try to top up to sort of see whether they can pinch one, stay right up that end of the ladder. But I've got the sense that if you haven't got the high-end young talent, and let's say, you know, who's the best side over the last 3 years? It's been Richmond. Richmond had the high-end young, well, not young talent, mid-age talent by that stage, but, you know, they went to the draft, and they got hold of Trent Cotchin as their captain and their leader in the Brownlow medals. They got hold of, with pick two, got hold of Dusty with pick three, other high-end, you know, Jack Rewalt was a first-round pick, Alex Ranch was a first-round pick when he was there. So they got that talent in, then you can go and get Tom Lynch or whoever else you want to sort of add to the pot at that stage. I don't see it working very often the other way around, where the top-up players end up winning a final. I can't remember the last one. Probably Sydney Swans have done a lot of, you know, topping up and trading over a period of time. Maybe they were the ones, the exception to the rule. But not very often have I seen sides win it by just having top-ups and not having their own young talent coming through. And I would have thought, from Clarko's point of view, I would have thought that Clarko would be a coach that would relish in having, you know, a young man playing his first game for the club and, you know, developing him to play his 100th and then his 150th, 200th game for the footy club. I mean, he's been through that pathway once before with that other group that I just sort of spoke about. I thought he'd relish that opportunity.
So before I let you have the last say on this, here's Jordan Lewis from Breakfast on SEN this morning.
Well, I think he said on the weekend that he's realistic where the club's at. No doubt he's the best coach in the league, but whether you want to go back down that rebuilding phase, because it's not quick. It's a 3 to 5 year process. So whether he has that type of energy in him, or whether it's a Sam Mitchell that he's just sitting in waiting, that has that energy and the smarts and the, you know, the football IQ to take over the reins and take that club forward through that transition period. Because, yeah, as we saw on the weekend, I mean, their back line is an issue because they've got no, apart from Sicily, no creative players. And Hawthorn, for a long period of time, relied on not necessarily winning the stoppages or the contested ball, but having that advantage down in their back six and being able to transition the ball really smartly and creatively off half back. And they just don't have those players. Now, you speak of Frawley and Frost and Stratton. They're great one-on-one defenders, but they're not the creative type that the Hawthorn game style relies upon. You know, a rebuild is highly zapping for a coach that's been around for so long.
So that was Jordan Lewis from Breakfast. Here's Ben McAvoy responding to Jordan Lewis.
Oh, look, I think that's why guys in the media have a job. You got to have an opinion. So Lewis just got himself a new job in the media. He's entitled to his opinion. I obviously don't agree with it. But look, I also can't argue with anyone having that sort of opinion. We haven't been putting the performances on the board in the last 2 weeks. But no, I don't think so. I have a lot of confidence in the group we've got that our best is definitely good enough.
So your last say on Hawthorn, Terry?
Oh, yeah, well, there's a big difference between their best and their absolute worst at the moment. And look, Dwayne, I'm going to go very, very early on this because I was going to use Hawthorn, and obviously Jordan Lewis has brought it up. I was going to be using Hawthorn as my spew up this week, so we're going to get that out the way a little earlier than normal.
I don't know about you guys. Like, if I see one bloke walk out of here getting a pat on the back from people out there for a good effort, I'll spew up!
Take it away, Terry.
Well, Dwayne, what is going on at the almighty Hawthorn Football Club? In round two this year, Clarko said the Cats aren't that good. We were just really bad. Then 2 weeks later, round four against North Melbourne, this is what he had to say after that particular game.
Yeah, I hope I'm not the only one that thought it was a dreadful game. If that's a spectacle that we're trying to search for in our game's in a dreadful space. I'm sorry for shit-canning our own brand, in our own club and our own team in this space, but I was so disappointed with the way we played, and I was so disappointed with the way that the game is being played right at the present time. It's frustrating, and it must be frustrating our fans.
So since that stage, that was a couple of weeks ago, there's been two games since that stage. The Hawks scored 4 goals in 3 quarters last week. Then on Friday night, football kicked 3 goals. That's 7 goals in 7 quarters of football. Really? I mean, that's what we're going to dish up? 7 goals in 7 quarters. 27 points was the lowest ever under Clarko and the lowest score since 1965 for a Hawthorn side. Fennigan, if that's not enough to make you spill up, I don't know what is.
Nice work, Plough. We'll go to the break on that. Big news out of the Swans, by the way. Josh Kennedy will miss the next 6 to 8 weeks with a ruptured medial ligament, whilst Isaac Henny will miss the rest of the season after requiring surgery on a dislocated ligament and a ligament injury in his ankle. So that is massive news on the back of, what, there's no Franklin, Reed, Naismith, McCartan. Wow. And now Kennedy and now Isaac Heaney. The Swans are in a spot of bother right now, more than we thought they were after Damien Harvey's comments last night. Plough is with us. Terry Wallace is with us. Back to your calls and more Terry Wallace after this break. Terry Wallace with me, and we will come to your calls very shortly. But, Terry, your thoughts on the Sydney situation now they've got all those injuries and announced a couple more in Kennedy and Dehaney, and your thoughts on that game yesterday?
Oh, geez, it's a massive blow with those two going out, isn't it? And when you looked at the paper this morning and the Swannies at home, where they haven't won yet, mind you, at the SCG, they've lost both their games there. But, yeah, starting favourites against the Gold Coast, but it's hard to sort of see that, you know, that will be the case now with you know, two of the absolute stars coming out of the lineup to go along with all those big fellas that you spoke about. They just haven't got any sort of shape or structure about the way they play. And then, you know, the half the time they use Heaney as their, you know, their hit-up forward as well. And, you know, him being out of the side now, it makes it really difficult. The one thing I'd love to know, Dwayne, or I'd love to be a fly on the wall in regards to yesterday's game, whether, and you know, the fly on the wall would be at the match committee, it was whether the Sydney Swans went down that pathway after they got jumped by Richmond, because Richmond just went bang, bang, bang early, kicked the first three, and then they went, gee, we look like we're out of our depth here, and then they flooded back, or did they go in with a mindset of we're going to be, you know, very, very ultra defensive and play that style of play right from the outset? Because I would have thought it was a game that you could have actually sold to your players that, you know, this is a very inexperienced or almost the most inexperienced Richmond side you're going to get an opportunity of playing against. So, you know, we could take them on and this is a chance for us to have a victory. I wonder whether that was the mindset going in or the mindset was defensive right from the outset, because I get the sense that when they got jumped early, they just went into, you know, flood everyone back, clog it up. They're a bit too good for us. Then the rain came after that, and then it just became a mess of a game from that stage onwards.
So why didn't Justin Longmuir do it then, when he was 7-1 down at quarter time against a team that, in theory, looked like they were the better of the two teams and were finals bound St Kilda? Justin Longmuir didn't put every man behind the ball and make it a scrap and try and, you know, make it ugly enough that they could be respectable losers?
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone will do it differently, and you know, that's the nature of the game. I mean, you know, actually, in my own time, I've played, you know, numbers behind the ball to try to sort of hang into games, you know, in the past as well. So, you know, you look at it, and it's clearly it's not the most attractive way to do it. But you know, if you think that it's a better opportunity of you getting a result, and in the end, I mean, as bad as what the game was, Swans had two or three opportunities in that last quarter that they could have nearly
the
game of football. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so, imagine Damien Harbick if that had stolen it.
Correct, correct. But look, I'm not saying that it's right. I'm not saying that it, you know, that it's attractive to watch by any stretch. It was a horrible game to watch. I understand the frustrations from Damien's point of view, but if you're sitting there and you're John Longmire, if you think that's your best way to give your team a chance to stay in the game and potentially a chance to pinch it, the coach will do what the coach wants to do. And, yeah, it's not necessarily always right, and I don't know the answer about how you're ever going to change it.
St Kilda, Terry, your thoughts on, whilst I was talking about Fremantle not putting players behind the ball and just playing their way back into it with a bigger score, St Kilda?
Yeah, well, they're brilliant, Dwayne, but they're not resilient. And to me, that just about sums them up in one sentence. I mean, if you allow the St Kilda Football Club to play their run-and-gun style, they'll win. They'll beat you. If they're allowed to just play and flip it around and play their own natural style, they'll beat you. If you pressurise them and take the way that they want to play the game off, they don't seem to have any other plan B or any other tactic to be able to do anything about it. And, you know, I did the game against Collingwood a couple of weeks ago where Collingwood just shut them down and there was nothing coming out of St Kilda the other way. When they were allowed to run and flow a week ago, they played great footy against Carlton and got the job done. Consequently, exactly the same. Look, on Saturday, watching that game on Saturday, they played like the Harlem Globetrotters in the first quarter. I mean, they were just flipping the ball left, right, centre, over their ear, behind their backs. But by the end of the game, they were beaten by the Washington Generals. I mean, they just didn't give anything once Fremantle put some sort of resistance towards them. So that would be really frustrating and really disappointing. I thought it was a great effort by Fremantle. You know, two players down, that Fife basically looked like he was on one leg. I mean, three touches in the second half, virtually standing in the goal square the whole time. And it was their kids that that really sort of did it again, stepped up again and really did a great job for them. So well done to Fremantle, but boy, oh boy, St Kilda, you've got to be able to fight the fight. It can't just be all pretty and nice the whole time, and that's at the moment, that seems to be the way that they want to play their football. Lovely to watch when it's going well, but you've got to have something in the kit bag when someone takes something off you.
So you mentioned kids, and I know you want to talk Isaac Rankin, so let's go straight to the MEGT Rookie of the Year. Kick goals with MEGT, your local apprenticeship experts. Your votes from the weekend and a comment on the youth.
Yeah, so my one vote went to Will Day for Hawthorn. They finally play a young player, and I thought he looked quite okay. Heard you have a couple of people ring in, Bulldog supporters, about Latham Vandermeer. Gave him the two votes. Another solid performance in a losing side with a couple of goals. He could have probably kicked three or four in that game. Just missed a couple late in the game. I gave my three to Caleb Sarong from Fremantle. There is one of the youngsters at Fremantle are starting to play. Thought he was really solid with his game. Gave the four votes back to Friday night at two. And now I'll have a go at this. Dwayne, you're better at these than what I am. Bossen Valugi. So I thought the young man played some really sharp football and really added to a bit of spark for the Collingwood Football Club. And clearly the five votes this week goes to a young man who makes footy more enjoyable to watch. You go and have a look at Isaac Rankin playing and you'll have fun with your footy. And he was absolutely sensational for the Gold Coast in his first game. Tried every trick that he had in his kit bag and I'm sure there's a few more in there, but I remember going to a game at Bar Stadium in the under-18 championships where he kicked five in that particular game. And what we saw on Saturday night was exactly what he was doing as an under-18. And he looks to be a star. I've been just waiting and waiting and waiting till we got the opportunity of seeing him. And I heard you early on in the show sort of saying he's been ready to go for 18 months, just couldn't get his body right. He's got to be a very, very exciting player.
Bossena Valangi is how you pronounce the name. He's actually, Collingwood website did something brilliant. And I called one of his games in the pre-season comp. And they had him on the website pronouncing his own name. So it's hard to get it right when you've got him on the website explaining how to pronounce his own name. More clubs should do it. So well done to Collingwood to Bossena Valangi.
Bossena Valangi. I'll get that one right from now on.
It's all right. I watched the video 55 times before I called him pre-season as well. Hey, player heaps to get to, but whilst we're doing the votes, can I get your coach of the year for Stockdale and Lego? Bring more experience to the table, stockdalelego.com.au, because I presume Justin Longmuir is going to be one of those that are up there, and David Teague deserves to be somewhere too.
Yeah, so I give three each week. I thought there were four standout performances. So the unlucky one was Nathan Buckley. I had to leave one of the four out. I gave Chris Scott for a great performance against the Brisbane Lions. Brisbane Lions were almost flag favourites at that stage, and Chris Scott and the Geelong boys, they did the job and had to come from behind to do the job. Justin Longmuir obviously was the other one. Really solid win for Fremantle. Backed up what they had done and had to do it the hard way as well. And the most enjoyable game of the round for me comfortably was the Carlton game last night. So David Teague was my third of my coaches.
Great stuff. Terry Wallace with us. Straight to your calls after the break. Carlo in Port Melbourne, Dave in Turriton, Sammy Lillidale coming to you straight after this. Stick around. That's the open line for Werribee Kia. Terry Wallace sticking around as well. Plenty to get to. You're with Dwayne's World.
We've dealt with that internally already. Luke's given Connor a call. And from our perspective, it wasn't necessary. It's a bad look. And considering all the things that are going on around the world at the moment, and even more specifically in Melbourne, that we just don't accept that type of behaviour. And Luke's apologised for that, and he understands what that looks like. He's disappointed in his own actions, and we had a really good chat about it. And we addressed it straight away as soon as we felt it was the right time. And he did that the next morning, and we put it to bed pretty quickly. And Connor was really, really good about it, and respected the phone call from Luke.
North Melbourne coach Rhys Shaw talking about Luke McDonald, and he's apologised to Connor McKenna. Your thoughts on that, Terry? Steve, Dave, Sam will come to your calls shortly, but your thoughts on that, Terry?
Yeah, the right thing to do. I mean, sometimes you go for the humour angle and it just doesn't work. I mean, we've got too much going on, too many things in society at the moment that have been impacted by this virus, whether it be severe health scenarios or people, you know, who have lost jobs. So to be making light of it, I don't think was the right thing to do. Was it a hanging offence? Probably not, but I think to get on the front foot straight away and nip it in the bud, and particularly from the Conor McKenna side of it as well, because I thought he copped a lot of flack that was unfair and unnecessary towards him as well. So, put it to bed and we all move on pretty quickly.
And speaking of gestures, Nick Natanui's gesture deserves backing over because it was beautiful.
I loved it. I loved the whole week. I mean, the Riley O'Brien explanation of trying to pump himself up and why he does this, and, yeah, that he might sort of stretch the truth a little bit. The silence from Nick Natanui surrounding it before the game, and I'll let my actions speak for me. The goal when he kicked and the reaction that he gave back to Riley O'Brien when he kicked the goal, the hard work ethic of Riley O'Brien, I've just got to play a good game today because of everything that's going on. And then the final aspect of it was, obviously the handing over of the phone at the end. I just thought it was a classic week of build-up and an attitude. And, I thought it came to a really classy sort of end result. Who did you think won the duel? Dwayne, because that was the other side of it. I mean, I heard a lot of people sort of have differing opinions on who they thought won the duel.
I thought Riley O'Brien was better around the ground, but the hard part for Riley O'Brien, who did he have around him? I mean, he's fighting a war with a team that's 0-6. Natanui's got so much class around him that he only has to palm it in the direction of Kelly and Gaff, and they're going to trap it and get it. Riley O'Brien hasn't got a lot of support right now. So in terms of what he did with what he's got around him, I thought Riley O'Brien maybe was even a little bit better. I didn't like John Patton's body language, though, Terry. The club staff, they need to be treated, you know, with respect, even at times when you're in the depths of despair because of your own injuries.
Yeah, I must say the same, and I think there were so many of us who obviously weren't calling the game or doing the game, that were watching it at home, and social media went down that pathway that we all thought that it might have been, another knee again. Such was the overriding reaction. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. I know and understand and completely know how that those situations come about. But if we don't want our tennis players to be reacting in the wrong capacity, and we want to knock them on the head for certain things when they show passion, but the wrong sort of passion. Well, I think we have the same, or should have the same attitude towards our footballers as well. And I know Jonathan reasonably well, and I think he would be disappointed. I think that would be another one where you would hope that there was a follow up. Afterwards, sort of saying, look, it was a step too far from me.
Terry Wallace with me. We'll talk about the bumps very shortly, but news just in, Curtis Taylor being cleared of a facial fracture after a scan this morning. So that's in relation to the Bombers and Dylan Shield's ban for that bump and whether they might even consider going to the tribunal to challenge, given the favourable medical report. But we'll talk about the bumps with Terry shortly. Steve on the road, you've been holding for an eternity. Sorry about that. Welcome to you.
Interpretation for deliberate rushed.
Yep.
Friday night, I thought the try by the Hawthorn player, fair enough. All right, okay, wrong decision, we'll move on. I will declare I'm a Collingwood supporter, so maybe a bit of bias there. But how can you get paid deliberate rush behind when you're actually pushed over by the forward?
Depends on whether you've had an opportunity to do something with it, Terry, but if you just wait for the guy to push you over, there's not a rush behind. He pushed you over, I suppose.
Yeah, and that was the one with Jack Riewoldt yesterday. Yeah. I thought the call was wrong. A very, very senior, experienced umpire, but doesn't mean that they get every single one absolutely 100%. I'll be interested to sort of see how it comes out. But did he have time to do other things with the ball? Yeah, well, he probably did, but that's not the umpire's decision. The umpire's decision is how did the ball end up behind the goal line? And the ball ended up behind the goal line because Jack Riewoldt pushed him over the line. So, I was surprised by that one being called. But just a couple of other things just on the umpiring while we're there, Dwayne.
Yep.
Everyone has raved about last night's game and how fantastic it was, but no one's actually mentioned that the ball was actually thrown up for the whole game. So I don't think it has the impact that people believe that it has on the game. And matter of fact, I think that the game moved out of the middle of the ground probably even more pure because of the fact that the ball was being thrown up rather than being bounced up because of the wet, slippery conditions up there in Queensland with the rain having come down early in that particular game. And the other one that I've heard a bit over the last couple of...
Can I just back that up, Terry? Because that's a brilliant point. I'm really glad you raised it. So let me back that up and say, hear. No one noticed, didn't care, almost made it better. No recalls, tossed in the air, fair contest every time. I'm with you.
Yeah, if they want to start from a history point of view, if they want to start a game or start each half with the bounce, I've got no issue with that at all. But I just think you get a more pure and clean takeaway out of the middle of the ground when it's done as it was done last night. So that was that point. And just the last one with the umpiring is there had a few, and they were mostly recently retired players who are in the media saying that the umpires, there's no need for them to report on match day anymore. I'm in a little bit of disagreement with that because it still is a tool for the umpire to stop remonstration and to stop actions within the game. Now, MRP will pick up anything that's missed regardless, so there's no worries about that. But if there's a scuffle at the time, someone's been belted, there's a scuffle at the time, the umpires use that as a tool to sort of say, hang on, get out of here, we've reported it, we've taken control of this, we've reported the player, and it actually sometimes stops the melee from actually going ahead. So the umpire still needs to be able to do his job. I know we've got other things now that can assist and add to that, but I still think the umpire needs to be able to do his job.
By the way, the Bombers have confirmed they will appeal at the tribunal, given the favourable medical report as well that's been handed to them in the last 4 or 5 hours. Dave in Turriton wants to talk Carlton. Welcome, Dave.
Yeah, g'day, Dwayne. I spoke to you last week, mate, and you sort of had a bit of a crack at Carlton's recruiting. I'm wondering if you changed your mind after last week. I reckon there are only two players off having a real crack at a grand final. If they get Papley and Ollie Wines that want to go there, you bring in Curno, Marchbank, you got Newman. We've got so much more depth, and I reckon we're well on the right track.
I think their coaching's been one of the big positives, I think, this year, Dave, in terms of the development of those recruits. So I think the way that David Teague's coaching them has allowed some of those guys who I think have been stifled a bit in the last couple of years to play a brand of football that allows them to use the skills that they've got. I mean, they've got weaponry, some of these kids, when they're drafted, and then they get to senior football and they're not allowed to use it. And yeah, I have been critical of Carlton dropping out the last. I don't like teams doing that. I reckon that it was detrimental to their brand for a little while. And I think you do need to complement your recruiting with getting senior players to your club as well, not just going to kids. So it's going to be interesting to see how far they can go, Dave. I still don't think they're a premiership contender this year, but I think at least they've turned a corner with a good coach and a style that might allow those kids who've been stifled to have their skill base enhanced in the view of all of us. But I'll be pretty keen to get Terry's thoughts on it. Terry?
Yeah, I'm really keen on their key position. They built the spine clearly first, and that's worked out really well for them. Obviously, they need to get Curnow back out in the park, and hopefully that knee can come up. I still think that they haven't got as much depth through the middle of the ground as some of the absolute better sides in the competition. So that would be an area that I still think that they can pick up on. Obviously, Papley and the caller mentioned Wines, that would add to their depth. And I think they would have been really pleased with Kennedy's performance coming through the middle of the ground, because it's that type of depth that will add to them if they can get enough of those type of players to do their role. So very much improving. Still fairly young, I think they're on the right track anyway.
And Mackay is a case in point. His improvement, watching him yesterday, he might actually fill the void that we thought Charlie Curnow was going to fill. Sam and Lilydale, welcome to you, Sam.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Just got two quick ones. Plough, I loved your tweet the other night about Gary Ablett. I've been saying this for a few years. I think the way the media's treated him since he got back to Geelong, it just tends to be a bit negative, and even the commentary team as well. So I'm glad you stood up and said that, because what Bruce was saying the other night was just disgraceful. The guy was unreal, and he's a champion of the game. Not to get into comparisons, but him and Selwood both had milestone games, and it just seemed like most of the media was focused on Joel Selwood that week. Your thoughts on that one?
Terry. I just thought they got it wrong on that particular evening, and so that's what I tweeted out, was the fact that it was almost critical that Gary looks like he's passed his best. Well, yeah, he made a couple of early errors, and particularly one out in the full, but from that stage onwards, he just didn't put a foot wrong.
Yeah, celebrate the positives when you're calling the game, and there's a lot of negatives you can harp on, but it's hard to find a negative in Gary Ablett Jr. given what he's produced so far. Take a break. Terry Wallace to wrap it up after the break.
He at 16. Listen to the crowd.
They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Yeah! Lambert with a setup kick for Revolt. This is it.
Oh, wow. In your life have you seen anything like that?
Bontempelli, the future star, the present star, steadies.
Terry Wallace with us for another minute. Footy golf and your thoughts on the Ben Long and Brad Ebert bumps. Terry, before we let you go.
Yeah, I'll just bang these out very quickly. Geelong and eagle, a double bogey for Brisbane. Collingwood and eagle, and Hawthorn a triple bogey. Fremantle and eagle, double bogey for the Saints. West Coast a birdie, Adelaide a bogey. Melbourne a birdie, Gold Coast a bogey. Essendon a birdie, North a bogey. Port an eagle, and GWS a bogey. Richmond a par, and Sydney a bogey, and Carlton an eagle, and the Bulldogs a triple bogey. So Port Adelaide out in the lead, 5 under. Essendon, and would you believe Carlton, 4 under, followed by Collingwood and Geelong, Dwayne.
Nice work. The bumps on the weekend. Ben Long, straight to the tribunal, your thoughts?
Yeah, 3 weeks for me. In a longer season, I can understand the 4, but a shorter season, 3. I thought that Dylan Shield, the 2 was about right for me. I wouldn't be horrified if it was 1. I thought a couple of weeks for Ebert as well.
Okay, and Marlon Pickett, he's got to go for the smother in that situation. Otherwise, he leaves himself open to be suspended if he causes injury.
Very much so, yeah, very much so. And that's a choice. We all have choices in life, and you make that choice. But it was almost like a brain fade weekend, wasn't it, with guys just making genuinely the wrong choices.
Great to have you on, Plough. Always love having a chat, and we'll talk again later this week. Terry Wallace joining us. We'll talk to you soon, Terry. Thank you.
Good on you, Dwayne. Cheers.
Terry Wallace for Stockdale and Lego. We see more than property. And for MEGT, your local apprenticeship experts. Thanks to everybody that called today. Midday Madness is back tomorrow, so don't forget some more Midday Madness. The promise is you call, you get on. That's the Midday Madness promise, and we'll take plenty of your calls tomorrow. Don't forget you can download the Dwayne's Ward podcast anytime you like it. Have a listen to Dwayne's World in your own good time. Tomorrow, this week's Rising Star is going to join us. Probably be Isaac Rankin, you think. And Bob and Andy, they're back. They're next. And Jake Lever is going to join them. Catch you tomorrow.